The rain had not stopped since Pearl left the station house, but it had changed character. It was no longer the driving, stinging deluge of the docks or the cold, insistent drizzle of Chinatown. It was a fine, pervasive mist that clung to everything, turning the cobblestones of Broome Street into a slick, treacherous mirror, and making the gaslights bleed halos of sickly yellow into the gray air. Pearl walked with her collar turned up, the canvas tube containing the blueprints pressed hard against her ribs. It felt less like a document and more like a bomb waiting for a spark. She needed to get out of the city, or at least out of the immediate orbit of the station house. Doyle's warning hung in the damp air between her shoulders. Stand down, Casey. Let the bureaucrats handle the infrastructure. But bureaucrats didn't smell the rot. Bureaucrats didn't know that Thomas Erickson had been murdered for a key that fit a lock in a man's private study, not a factory floor. She turned off Broome Street, aiming for the quieter residential blocks near the Lower East Side, where the tenements gave way to row houses and the streets were narrower, lined with brick walls that seemed to lean in to listen. She needed a place to think. A place where the only eyes watching her were the rats scuttling in the alleys. She passed the apothecary on Pell Street, the bell silent behind the closed door, and felt the weight of Lau Wei's riddle in her pocket alongside the vial of poison. Save the boy. Or save the truth. The dichotomy was false. There was no saving either if she didn't understand what she was looking at. Her destination was a small, drafty loft space she'd secured months ago, a forgotten storage unit above a shuttered haberdashery on Orchard Street. It was cheap because it was cold, and Pearl preferred cold. Cold kept the mind sharp. She climbed the three flights of stairs, her ankle protesting with a dull throb that matched the rhythm of her heartbeat. The key to the loft was hidden under a loose brick in the hallway, a trick she'd learned from her father, who had taught her that trust was a liability and security was a habit. She retrieved the key, unlocked the door, and stepped inside. The room was sparse. A single cot, a crate used as a table, and a window that looked out onto the fire escape and the brick wall of the neighboring building. The air smelled of dust and old paper. Pearl locked the door, engaged the deadbolt, and then pulled the canvas tube from her coat. She laid it on the crate and unrolled the blueprints. They were not factory plans. They were not even the simple schematics of a railway yard. These were intricate, detailed maps of the Grand Central Terminal's expansion projects, dated 3 years prior. Red ink marked specific points along the lines points that corresponded to structural supports, ventilation shafts, and electrical conduits. Pearl traced the lines with a gloved finger, her breath shallow. She had seen these markings before. Not here, not in the drawings, but in the wild. She remembered the sabotage at the textile mill in Jersey City 6 months ago. The way the main steam valve had been weakened, not broken, but weakened. A precise, calculated erosion. She remembered the comments in the police reports dismissed as negligence, but she remembered the angle of the fracture. It wasn't accidental. It was surgical. She pulled a magnifying glass from her pocket, a tool she kept for examining bullet casings and worn locks, and leaned over the blueprints. The red X's were not random. They were placed at intervals that seemed arbitrary at first glance, but when she overlaid the map of the current construction zones with the map of the previous sabotage sites, a pattern emerged. The X's formed a network, a web. And the center of the web was not a single station, but the main arterial line connecting the northern suburbs to the terminal. Pearl's mind raced, connecting dots that had previously existed in isolation. The men in gray coats, Elena's warning, Sila's Vane's invitation to tea, which had been less a social call and more a demonstration of power. Vane wanted to monopolize transit contracts, but how did you monopolize a monopoly? You made the competition obsolete. You made the existing infrastructure unreliable. You created a crisis that only your company could solve. She picked up a charcoal pencil and began to sketch. If the sabotage was a network, then the next target was the weakest link in the chain. She looked at the dates on the blueprints. The expansion projects were scheduled for completion in 6 months, but the maintenance cycles for the older lines were quarterly. The Delancey Street line had undergone a major overhaul last winter. The stress on the tracks was high. The load-bearing columns in the lower levels were under constant strain from the weight of the trains above. Pearl's eyes narrowed. She focused on the area marked with a dense cluster of red X's near the junction of the Park Avenue and Lexington Avenue lines. It was a convergence point, a bottleneck. If that section failed, it wouldn't just be a derailment, It would be a collapse. The entire upper level of the terminal could come down. Thousands of commuters, hundreds of workers, and the chaos would be absolute. She heard a noise outside, a soft scrape against the fire escape, then a shadow passed across the window. Pearl froze. Her hand went to the .32 in her holster, but she didn't draw it. Not yet. She listened. The rain drummed on the tin roof of the fire escape. The city hummed in the distance. Then, a voice, low and muffled, drifted through the glass. "Check the rear," it said. Pearl's blood ran cold. They were here, the men in gray coats. They weren't just watching the tenements anymore. They were watching her. They knew she had the blueprints. They knew she was decoding them. She moved quickly, silently. She rolled up the blueprints, shoved them back into the canvas tube, and slid the tube into the lining of her coat. She extinguished the single oil lamp on the crate, plunging the room into darkness. She didn't bother with the window. The fire escape was compromised. She moved to the back of the loft, where a small, grimy window looked out onto an alleyway filled with garbage cans and shadows. It was a tight squeeze, but she had navigated worse. She climbed onto the sill, testing the wood for stability. It groaned, a faint sound that might have been lost in the rain or might have been heard by the men below. She hesitated for a fraction of a second, then pushed herself out into the night. The alley was narrow and slick with mud. Pearl dropped down, landing softly on her feet. She didn't look back. She ran. She ran past the overflowing bins, past the broken bottles, her boots slipping on the wet cobblestones. She could hear footsteps behind her, heavy and deliberate. Not the light, cautious steps of a patrolman, but the purposeful stride of someone who owned the night. She turned a corner, aiming for the main street, but a figure blocked her path. A man in a gray coat, tall, broad-shouldered. His face was obscured by the brim of his hat and the shadows, but she could feel his gaze on her. He didn't speak. He didn't need to. His presence was a wall. Pearl skidded to a halt, her hand hovered over her gun. "Step aside," she said, her voice sharp, clipped. The man didn't move. "Miss Casey," he said. His voice was smooth, aristocratic, Selah's Vane's voice, or one of his servants. "You're making a mistake." "I'm making a choice," Pearl replied, "one you don't understand." "You don't understand the cost," the man said. "Some things are better left buried, for the good of the city." "The city doesn't need buried secrets," Pearl said. "It needs survivors, and right now you're killing them." The man took a step forward. "Give us the tube, Pearl. Walk away, go back to your father's shadow. It's safer there." The mention of her father was a low blow, designed to rattle her, to make her doubt her own agency. But Pearl had spent 29 years trying to prove she was more than a legacy. She had spent the last week proving she was more than a pawn. She wasn't going to let him take the truth, and she wasn't going to let him take her. She drew the .32, the metal was cold against her palm. "I said step aside." The man smiled. It was a cold, thin expression. "You can't shoot your way out of this, Miss Casey. There are too many of us." He raised his hand. From the shadows of the alley, more figures emerged. 3, 4, 5, all in gray coats, all armed. Pearl's heart hammered against her ribs. She was outnumbered, outgunned, but she had something they didn't. She had the map. She had the knowledge. And she had the desperation of a woman who had nothing left to lose. She didn't aim at the man in front of her. She aimed at the gas lamp hanging from the wall above the alley entrance. She fired. The shot rang out, loud and sharp in the confined space. The glass shattered. Gas hissed out, mixing with the damp air. Sparks flew from the broken fixture. The men in gray coats flinched, shielding their faces. Pearl didn't wait. She turned and ran deeper into the alley, toward a gap in the fence that led to the next block. She heard shouts behind her, the sound of boots pounding on wet stone. She didn't stop. She couldn't stop. She burst onto the next street, gasping for breath. The rain was heavier now, washing away the traces of her passage. She ducked into a doorway, pressing herself against the brick wall, trying to steady her breathing. She checked her revolver, 2 rounds left. She checked her coat. The tube was still there, safe. But they would find her. They would track her. She couldn't stay in the city. She couldn't stay in New York, not until she knew what was coming. She thought of the subway, the convergence point, the bottleneck. If she was right, the attack was imminent. Maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, she had to warn someone, someone who wasn't bound by bureaucracy, someone who understood the stakes. "Doyle, but Doyle had told her to stand down. Would he listen, or would he dismiss her as a hysterical woman chasing ghosts? She needed another option, someone who operated outside the system, someone who knew the underground. Lao Wei, the apothecary, he had warned her, he had given her the vial. He had spoken in riddles, but the meaning was clear: choose quickly. Pearl looked north toward Chinatown. The rain blurred the lights of the city into streaks of gold and white. She was tired, her ankle throbbed, her mind was racing with possibilities and dangers, but she was alive, and she had the truth. She adjusted her coat, feeling the weight of the blueprints against her skin. It was a burden, but it was also a weapon. She turned north, walking with purpose into the gray morning. The men in gray coats were hunting her, but she was no longer prey. She was the hunter, and she knew exactly where the trap was set. The Grand Central Line was the target, and Pearl Casey was going to be the one to spring it. She passed a newsboy selling the early edition of the Herald. The headline screamed about a strike at the garment district. Pearl ignored it. The real story was hidden in the lines of a blueprint, in the silence of a townhouse, in the poison of a vial. She kept walking, her eyes fixed on the horizon where the sun was beginning to break through the clouds. It was a weak, pale light, but it was enough to see by, enough to find the truth, enough to save the boy, or save the truth. She would do both, or die trying. Pearl paused on the corner, the weight of the canvas tube pressing against her hip as she surveyed the subterranean maw of Delancey Street. The air grew thick with the scent of wet stone and coal dust, a familiar perfume that signaled the descent into the city's hidden underbelly. With a steady breath, she stepped into the gloom, leaving the indifferent clamor of the street above for the secrets that waited in the dark. She turned the corner onto Canal Street, heading toward the subway entrance. The underground was where the secrets lived, and she was going to find them.